you for listening to me. So I will talk about Young-Webster equation and grade representation. So we talk about this kind of representation and the way to have knots invariant. And afterwards we will try to kind of generalize this notion of Young-Webster equation. So we'll try to see how we can abstract things like going to monoidal categories, and with monoidal categories we will have a bit more space to work with, so we will try to abstract the structure. And when we have the good abstraction of say tangles, then we try to find algebraic structure that define those categories, those special categories, and this, those algebraic structure will be off algebra, and off algebra with a bit more structure afterwards. So we'll define on this. So first of all, let's talk about the Young-Webster equation. The Young-Webster equation, so this will be the first part. It's about Young-Webster equation. So Young-Webster equation arises from various topics like physics or quantum physics. I don't know really how, but I know that it arises from those subjects. But it's also really interesting to understand grades. So a Young-Webster equation is an automorphism. If you take a vector space V, and a solution of a Young-Webster equation will be a C in the automorphism of V tensor V that verifies some relation, so that C and you just replace the term, so it will be like first identity times C, and afterwards it will be C. And so, just if you glance at it, you cannot easily see the links with grades, but in fact, when you define grades, you can see it as you can see grades as a group, and this group can be presented with the Artin's presentation. So the group BN can be, so you take the group with presentation, so the usual relations that are sigma A plus 1, sigma A.
Excuse me, please.
Yes?
What is the symbol of the V capital in the second line?
V capital?
Yeah.
Second line?
No, second line, please.
Vector space, yeah, sorry.
Merci. Yeah,
it's a vector space. So the two relations are, well, and with this presentation, in fact, we can see that each solution of the Young-Webster equation can give us a representation of this group. In fact, if you take a solution of the Young-Webster equation, then you can define some other automorphism, which will be CI, you take identity for n minus I minus 1 component, and then you take C, and then the identity for the rest of them. N minus plus 1. And so with those elements, CI, you can define a group morphism. So going from BN to the automorphism of B tensor N, and to sigma I, you put CI. And sigma I here, of course, it corresponds to a crossing. So in fact, a solution, Young-Baxter equation is basically ready-made first three.
So excuse me, the number of generators is usually one times less than the index of the group.
Yeah, so it's
so sigma I from 1 to n minus 1.
N minus 1, okay. So yeah, okay. So n minus 1 here?
No,
it's
okay.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, yes, because we have, okay. So, well, so we have a group representation. So, in fact, we just with this equation, we can find some representation of Bn. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this representation of Bn can be transformed to a not invariant by taking the closure of some break. If you take a knot and you take a break, that closure is this knot. You will have an invariant, and this corresponds to take the trace of the character of this representation. Yes.
In the definition of CI, yes. Isn't it n minus I minus one?
Yes, maybe. Yes, of course. Yes, sorry. Okay, so. So this corresponds to Braid representation, and we can pass to knots or links by taking the character, the trace. So and seeing that every link is a closure of a braid. And so in fact, what we are really going to look at is knots. So you can take a knot, you can have an orientation on this knot, but you can also get a framing which will be like a transverse vector field, or like if you look at it as a kind of a ribbon. And so we will try to produce some invariant of the most general more general thing that just knot or links, and we will see tangles and paths. So some tangle will be, so we take two lines and you put strands from one of them another, and you allow some knots inside, so you can basically do a lot of things. So what we are doing now is we are lessening the topological stuff that we are looking at. We are looking at a broader class of topological stuff in order to associate it to an algebraic structure which will have a lesser strong condition on it. So we could find more algebraic stuff with this structure. So how to pass from this topological stuff, which are tangles, or directed tangles, if we take an orientation, or even ribbon tangle, if we take a frame tangle. So we want to associate it to algebraic stuff. First of all, we can look at operation that we might do with tangles. And those operations are, you can juxtapose them, like there is two strands attached there and another tangle with the two strands here. You can put them together. So that will be kind of a composition of tangle. And you can also like put them side by side. And that will be like a tensor product. So we might also look at tangles as morphism of a category. So we will look at the category of so tangle, or we will denote tan if it's a tangle, directed tangle if we are looking at directed tangle, and the rib or directed ribbon if it's ribbon tangle or directed ribbon tangle. And so now we will explain what is this category. So the category entangle, let's say. You take objects which are the natural integers, and morphism, which are the tangles. So if you take on from Mn, this will be the tangles from going where there's M strand at the start, and N strands at the end. And so these morphisms, you can compose them. You will have units for every n, so you take just lines. And so this is for the tangle. If you want directed tangle, in fact you don't take integers, but like a finite sum of plus and minus, which will give you the orientation. Ribbon is the same, but with the ribbon tangle here. And now our goal will be to try to understand the properties of those categories and have a way to abstract them. Mainly, we will try to have a functor from, say, directed ribbons into a category. Category. And we want a good structure to consider on this category to always have this kind of functor. In fact, you can even you can add here some coloring, so you have a set, and at each point you can put an element of this set, so it's a coloring, and you will have this kind of functor. So let's try to understand what structure should we put on C, on this category. And to consider this, we might also consider how to define this functor. So we want to define some basic tangles, some building blocks. Yeah.
Sorry, so the ribbon category,
yes.
It's like tangles, yeah. But thickened?
With a framing.
Ah, okay.
Framed.
And directed is?
Is you take, you orient your tangles. And so if if there's if there's a minus, the strands go up, and if there's a plus, it goes down. So if you have something like this, we have a minus plus, and this is why we take finite sum of. We want to cut our tangle to see what are the building blocks, the morphisms that will generate all morphisms. And we can, if you look at tangles, you can, in fact, try to, you can put them to pieces. And we want to understand how will the concatenation work in C.
What is C?
It's a category. It's a general category, but we want to find what structure we might put on it to have a functor. So we have concatenation that we want to understand, and we want to understand morphism, like when something, like when there's some kind of a grading, but also when we have something like this or like this. And the reverse one with the other orientation. So you have the other one here.
So, yes? When you put signs, then the object should be elements with signs. Right?
Yes, yes, of course. Here it's just for tangles, but for directed stuff, it will be a finite sum of plus and minus.
List.
Huh?
List, not sum.
Yeah, list. Oh, so, sum. Why did I say sum? It's list, yeah. It's a finite a sequence, sorry. Finite sequence. I'm sorry. Okay, so we want to understand those kind of morphisms, and we want to understand to put a structure in order to understand them in C. So now this is to understand those direct ribbons with colorings. So I will now erase here. Okay, so the concatenation is the first thing we should define. So what is the good point of view in categories to understand concatenation? The good point of view will be monoidal categories. So if you have a monoidal category, you will have this kind of concatenation by the tensor product. So let's define what is a monoidal category. So a strictly monoidal category this will be a category C endowed with a functor from C times C to C, which will verify an also an object, a unit. So it's the data of a functor and an object, which verifies a kind of associativity and unique condition. So you want that if you take UV and W objects of your category, you want so the associativity, you want the units, and you want the same thing for morphisms. Just associativity and units for objects and morphism. And this will define what we call a monoidal category, a strictly monoidal category. A monoidal category being the same thing, but here we have isomorphism and not qualities. But there is a theorem of MacLane that says that every strictly monoidal category, every monoidal category is can be seen as a strictly monoidal category. There's an equivalence of categories, so it's okay to just consider this, and this will be helpful with calculation later. To just have identities.
Yes. So normally, the tensor product is a morphism in what category?
It's a functor for the category. It's a functor. Sorry. So we have a functor
from
the product category C times T to C. And this formally will allow us to concatenate some tangles. In fact, if we look at the to ribbons or tangle or those categories, they are monoidal. So, and the monoidal structure is, in fact, the concatenation. Okay, so this was to have the concatenation. Now we need to understand all those morphisms. The first we shall try to understand are those two. Those two morphisms, in fact, can be understood as a structure on category, which is the rigidity. It's the existence of a dual and a mass of evaluation or co-evaluation that satisfies some properties that are visual, but let me define it first. So, first of all, we will define what a rigid category is. A category. Let's see where Well, every, for every object V, there is a dual V, V star that are, which is also an object of the category, and maps evaluation that goes from V star times it to the unit. So those maps are kind of, if you think of it as a, I don't know, vector space, this is just the evaluation, and this will be the co-evaluation. Which, you put sum of the tensor bases of the sum of the bases and the dual element of this base. This is the algebraic understanding of this. And this, those elements should verify some properties. And those properties are that, well, in fact, there will be something like this equals this informally. But if you want to write what it means, it's like you need that the co-evaluation of an object composed with the identity of this object. In fact, if you it's a tensor product. Yes, okay. So if you take okay, let me just write it
and I explain.
So this means that, so is it this way or is it the other? Well, we can see one relationship here, but if you want. Here we have the identity, here we have the co-evaluation. So this would be the other way, the other relation that must be verified. So we have the tensor product and the composition of evaluation and the identity. So this is a tensor product because it's put together. So you see that if you want this to be the identity, this is just the other meaning, the other way around. This is the second relation that should be verified, but put in a graph. So okay, this defines a rigid category. So this is the first one, and this is the identity, and this is the second one. I think it's of U star here. Okay, so these are the two relations that should be verified for a rigid category. And in fact, we also need that, in fact, this dual element can be natural. It should be an entry equivalence of category from C to C up. But I won't go into the details. So I will erase here. To keep track of what we are doing, I will put here what we are trying to do. So we are trying to understand concatenation, and this is done by monoidal structure. We want to understand this and this. This is rigidity. In fact, this can be seen as the evaluation, which go from V star to V, and this is the co-evaluation, which goes from 1, so the unit this to V and V star. And the convention is that if something goes down, you don't put the star, and if it goes up, you put the star. It's kind of the orientation. And now we want to understand the braiding, so this kind of object. And we want the corresponding structure on categories. So corresponding structure that we could put on this category, so it's another structure on it, will be the grading. So we want, we say that a category, we want a monoidal category. C is a monoidal category. And we say that it's C is graded, or it's also called the Poisson-Kaczorowska. If we have isomorphism, natural isomorphism, C, U, V for each couple of elements of object of the category, that goes from that in fact realize a kind of a grading, so it's it flips the element of the tensor product, so it gives you a that is a natural isomorphism. And if you want a non-trivial grading, you might want something that is not involutive. So we don't want the.
Excuse me, what word is in the parentheses? Or
quasi-tensorial.
Quasi-tensorial.
Okay. And you want such isomorphism that verifies some properties, which will be the writing of those properties are fastidious. I will write them, but they translate into something nice. So let's not be afraid of huge notations. Same, but the other way around. So you have here you have the tensor product, here you have U, and you want it to be the identity of V tensor C for the U. Here it would be CUV, and it's also the identity of U tensor V tensor W. So this morphism from U tensor V tensor W to itself. The third one is more like a unit compatibility, which is the fact that this is the same as this, which is C, which is the identity of U. If you take the equality, one tensor U is U. So those are compatibility with the tensor product, and here is the compatibility with the unit. And this basically means that if you take, say, if you want to translate, I don't know, one of those two, it will translate in, you take U, V, and W, this is the tensor product, and you want them to grade them. So if you put this one here, okay, so you just consider this, you want to translate what it is, so you grade U and it's V here, so V and W, so you put things like this, then you take the identity of U, it's U here, it's V here, so here it's VW, the identity of U. And then you compose it with this one. So V and W, U and W must be graded. Yeah? And here you have the identity. And so this should be equal to this one, which we will be denoting it like we put U tensor W, we put W, this is the tensor product, and here we put we have one strand here, and like two strands go like this. So in fact, it's one strand, but to make it a bit more visual, you might see it as two strands, because this means that you can separate the tensor product like this. So it's really visual, but written like this, it's not nice. And this is the identity compatibility, but this is the important drawing that you should have in mind when you think of a graded category. This is really the essence of it. In fact, when we have a graded category, now we can define those kind of objects. So you can, the functor can pass this kind of object with to the category, and so this will be the grading or quasi-tensorial. The structure. And now we nearly have everything we want to define the functor, but in fact there are two morphisms. These two that kind of look as the same as evaluation and co-evaluation, but in the other way. So since we don't want to trouble ourselves with much more structure, we might be tempted to define it with already existing structure. And this can be done, but we will have some kind of trouble. So let's try to define this with only those two. So if you want to define this one, you might see it as, I don't know, like we can see it like this, say this, and here we have the braiding, and here we have the evaluation. So if you take this this definition, and you try to say that this will be, I don't know, F tilde, and we define it as the evaluation composed with C of V and V star. Then we can also define the co-evaluation, but since we must have something like this. So if we take this, we must have this. Okay. So the only possibility, if we take framed elements, if we are in directed ribbons, the only possibility is that our co-evaluation, which is going this way, it has to be, I don't want to mess it up, so I think it's like this, okay? So our co-evaluation tilde will be the braiding and the co-evaluation. Could have worked, but in fact we want them to verify, say, just Rademeister 1. So we want them to verify this equals this. If we direct it like this, so if we rewrite what we have here in terms of those two, that means this one and this one, we will have something like, so it's this one, we'll have something like this, but this is not the identity, it's something like this, I think. So this might not be the identity, even in the real ribbon category, it's not the identity in the real ribbon categories. So if we want it to be the identity, we must add some extra structure. So we cannot do this as simply. We must put something else. And so this is why we add another structure, which will be the balancing of the category, which I will define now. And this balancing will allow us to consider this element just by putting some box here and here. We'll put the balancing will be here and here, and it will be done as though to have this identity here. To avoid this kind of twisting. So let's get on with it. So we define a rigid monoidal category. To be is balanced if for every element U in the object, every object of the category, we have an automorphism, which we will call BU, automorphism, that is compatible with the tensor product, and will verify this. So you want it to be the tensor product of U and V. Sorry. Of U and V should be the grading of the grading of the two, and then you put the so the compatibility is this.
So the category is not rigid monoidal, it is graded.
Yes, yes, we need to be graded. Or rigid monoidal, rigid graded monoidal category.
If you say graded, it includes rigid. Yeah,
yes. Yes. Yes, yes, we need all of our structure, our preceding structure. Yeah. So we wanted to verify this and some compatibility with the rigidity structure. So mainly that the automorphism of the dual element is the dual of the automorphism, and this will allow us, if we put now, if we try to redefine this evaluation and co-evaluation, try to define it right to verify the randomizer move and so on. So we might put this notation, and we put. We put it to be the evaluation of it, and here we will put our balancing. So here comes the balancing, so it's the identity of V star tensor, our automorphism, well, the inverse of the automorphism, and then we put the grading, and we have defined a new element. Same thing for the evaluation. So we put the grading here. Here we put the balancing. So here it will be BV tensor identity of the star, and of course the co-evaluation. Okay. So now, if you do the computation, you see that you will see that it can verify those moves. Mainly it's the balancing can be seen as an untwisting. If you put some twist, you kind of untwist it. But you must see it in the box, because it's not the same thing as what we define here. So it's an extra structure that is meaningful to understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm. could you read the first line here? The first equality.
Yeah, sorry. So BU tensor BV is equal to C V comma U. Oh, I'm sorry, this is confusing. Composed with C of U comma V, composed with B of U tensor.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Okay. So now, so yes, this balancing was the last element that we needed in order to define this function. So now we have, let's say, the directed ribbon categories that can be abstracted in terms of monoidal structures, so with the rigidity, the braiding, and the balancing. And this is the first part of what I am saying. It's we abstract things, and now we want to try to find this kind of structure. So here will be the algebraic stuff, so the upper algebras, that we will link to this topological stuff by the monoidal categories. And so now I will speak about upper algebras and try to relate it to these monoidal structures.
So you should mention that a category with all these structures is called ribbon category.
Yes, it's called, yeah. Let's call it. Let's say here it's directed ribbons. It's a ribbon category, and there would be the quasi-triangular of algebras with the central element, with an element, the balance element.
But on the left, it's directed frame ribbon, right?
Yes, yes, ribbon. Yeah, by ribbon, I mean frame tangles.
Okay.
I'm sorry if it's confusing. I read this notation somewhere. Okay, so, okay, I'm erasing. Let's talk about upper algebras.
Just to be sure, for the four categories you mentioned at the beginning, tangles, directed ribbons, only directed ribbon is all these properties.
Yes. Because, I think.
What does
maybe direct? It's directed tangles because
is directed tangle right ribbon?
I think you don't have the you have a kind of a ribbon element, but yes, no. If you want it will not be just balance. You need something more need to have a kind of identity and the balancing may should be something like
an element. They all are ribbon category, except that you won't be able to find examples for the
Yes, other well, it's ribbon categories, but they won't. This would not be useful because this is too much. We have loosened too much the structure. There will be something when you twist, and if you are with just tangles, that if you twist, don't do anything because of Rademeister 1. And then the real Rademeister 1. So then you will have seen that distinguish twisted thing, but you will not have twisted things.
So he's going to search for algebraic structures providing some examples of ribbon categories.
Now
he will not find ribbon categories which resembles to
just tangles.
Rib or well, for rib you can, but for
direct
tangles and so on. He will find something corresponding to D-rib.
Because in fact, each more structure you put on it will restrict our way to find the algebraic stuff here. So if we want something that look just at tangles, we will restrict it perhaps too much in the algebraic sense. So just let's we widen up the more possible with the directed triangle tangle to have a chance to have something here. And let's try to see what it is. So let's define our algebra. So an off algebra will be an algebra, so mainly a vector space with a multiplication and a unit, so 1 and a. This is an algebra. If you want it to be a bi-algebra, we need to put some extra structure on it. So a co-multiplication and a co-unit. And so these are k-linear. If you take, let's say, n, it goes from v tensor v to, from, sorry, a tensor a into a. The unit is an element of a. And it verifies that if you put the product with the unit, it's the same. Okay. And now you want to put some extra structure, which will make it become a bi-algebra. And this delta should... so delta goes from a to a delta a. Epsilon will go from a to k. K is your base table. If you take A is a k-algebra, so here it's a k-vector space. And you want some morphism of algebra. And you want them to verify some kind of dual properties of the multiplication. So we want some associativity and unitary condition. Mainly this leads to, so you want them to have those properties. So if you so this is the equivalent of the associativity. So it's a co-associativity, let's say. And of course you want the co-unity condition also, kind of a dual statement. So you want it to be identity of a delta, and you want it to be the identity of A. So well, let's try to simplify this. Just a piece of notation. When we consider the co-multiplication, the co-multiplication of an element, so this is the notation, can be written as a linear combination of tensors, and we denote it like this. So it's a sum, but let's denote it like this. And if we denote it like this, in fact, the first condition is just saying that if you use the co-multiplication twice, whether on the first or the second one, if you put the, let's say that, in fact, that just means that if you take this and this, this is the same thing. And we can denote it, this one, tensor x2, tensor x3. So this is the meaning of this. So that's kind of a poor associativity. You can write it, if you apply it twice, wherever you apply it, you will get this. So, okay. So this is a bi-algebra. The first piece of structure that we put on our algebra. Now, we want it to be an off algebra, so let's define what is off algebra. And afterward, we will try to put something on the right part of the board. Let's define our op algebra. So our op algebra is a B a biangebra where you have a special element endowed with an element S, which is just an endomorphism of L. And this endomorphism should verify some properties. In fact, we have seen in the last talk that there is a convolution product, and this is in fact the inverse of the identity for this convolution product. So this means that so I will write this convolution product like this, and I will define it after. So this must be the epsilon times the. Okay, and the convolution product is so you take you go from so first you go from A with the co-unit with the co-multiplication you go to A tensor A, then you put you apply F and G, and you just have to multiply the two bits to have go to A and you have what we call the convolution product. And for this product, S is the inverse of the identity. So, okay. Sorry. Well, we have defined an op algebra.
Sorry, you should mention the delta is a morphism of algebra.
Yes, I see that. Oh, sure. I didn't write it. Okay. I told it, but. I didn't write it, sorry. Yes, okay. Now let's try just to relate this algebraic stuff with the monoidal categories. So a way to relate this algebra with what we said earlier is to look at representation of the algebra. Representation being A modules, so we will see that. So a representation, we define what is a representation, and we will try to fill this this whiteboard. So a representation for A of algebra. A representation of R of A. Is a collection of morphism. So you take you have a you need to have a V and a vector space and a map lambda D which go from A tensor V to V, and this map should verify that this is a linear map, and it should verify that that we have some properties, which is the properties of A modules. So mainly that it's a bit the writing is a bit boring, but this is just saying some basic stuff about A modules. So I should have written it. I will write it in another way, and that's. And these two things can be rewritten as kind of associativity. And this is just so this is one. This is a remark. One is this, and the two is just the fact that you have the one element acts trivially. So it's basically just just telling this thing in this language. Okay, so now, in fact, what is important with the representation of Hodge algebras is that we can see it as a category. So the representation of A will be a category. But we want it to be monoidal. So in fact, we want that if you take V and W representation of A, you want V tensor W to be a representation of A. And this can be done because we have a co-unit, a co-multiplication. So if you want to act on V tensor W, you know that V tensor W is a tensor A representation, a tensor A module. But now, since we have the delta, we can say that we can define it to be of, let's say, little elements, sorry. So we have V tensor W. And since this is a tensor A, an A tensor A element, we will have A1V tensor A2W. So this will know V tensor W with a module structure.
Excuse me. Yes? In this definition, this is just representation of algebra. Right?
Algebra, yeah. Yes, it's a representation of algebra. Yes. It's not a core representation, it's just a representation. Okay, so we have this, and now we want a unit, because the two axioms of the monoidal structure is this and the unit. And the unit will be K, so our base field. And we want to endow it with a module structure. So, luckily, we have another element in our algebra, which is the co-unit, the epsilon, which we can just we can put it like this. So we just have this, and this will also endow K with the K will be a representation of A, and it will be the unit of the tensor product. So, with Bayes algebra, we will have so it's delta and epsilon that are doing the work to have to have the condition to have a monoidal structure. And now we may look at what we need for rigidity. And the rigidity, in fact, will come with our antipode. I didn't tell it, but S is called antipode. This S will be needed to ensure the rigidity structure. So, if we want a dual element, this star, which is the morphism from V to K here. So here it's a K vector space, but we don't know yet that it can be a module. So if we put, let's say we have F in this star, and we want something here. We might be tempted to do so, but in fact this will not work because it will be contravariant if you put AB to BBA. It would not satisfy this. So what we can do is, because S is a contravariant map, we can put it here. And so in fact if you put SA, this will work, and you will have a Hamiltonian structure. This will end up V star with the Hamiltonian as the R representation. Okay, so the antipode here. So, Hodge algebra. and it's the antipod that makes the rigidity. Next we want to see the braiding. So now we must put some extra structure to have this link here. And the structure that we need to put in on the Hopf algebra will be a Herr matrix. So let's talk a bit about it. So So a definition. So a Hopf algebra will be quasi-triangular if it has a special element R. So Hopf algebra is quasi-triangular if exists R in the tensor product invertible, which will satisfy some property. So subject, first of all, it is quasi-triangular, and it means that in fact it's almost co-commutative, meaning that if you take the opposite co-multiplication being if you have delta A is A1 tensor A2, the opposite will be A2 tensor A1. And in fact, being co-commutative means that these two elements are the same. Being almost co-commutative means that, in fact, they are related by an element. And this is the element. So we have that delta of will be R delta, so an element, R minus 1. This is the first property that that we need. Afterwards, we want some kind of compatibility with the tensor product. So we need some equation to put here, and this will be the fact that if you this will be I will talk about this notation. This will be here, and the second one is if you take first the identity and then the delta, this will be R12. And okay, and this notation. So if you have R12, say this is if R is a sum of AI tensor BI, then R12 will be tensor 1. So in fact, you just put the 1 where at 3 there is no 3 here, so you put the 1. If you want R13, you will have AI times 1 times BI, and so on. So you want this to be satisfied. And this, let's just talk about the theorem. So the theorem is that, in fact, if you have this quasi-triangular structure, it will give you a braiding here. I didn't write how you link this. You take representation of A. Yeah. Okay? So it's by looking at representation of A. I didn't write it, sorry. And so this means that if a Hopf algebra is quasi-triangular, then the category of representation will be braided. Okay, so this is a theorem. So A is quasi-triangular if and only if representation of A is a braided. Okay. just if you have an element like this, in fact, you can also obtain an equation that really looks like our first Jan-Bachter equation that we put, but it's not quite the same. And it's the quantum Jan-Bachter equation. And this is the fact that if you take R12, R13, R23, you will have the same that R23, R13, R12. So, well, it's kind of look like the same as we define and like a Rademeister 3. And this is the, let's say, the quantum Jan-Bachter equation. Well, it's a Hare matrix is the solution of this equation. Okay. This was just, yes?
Is it easy to see how a quasi-triangular structure on the Hopf algebra translates to a braided structure on the category of representation?
Well, it's a theorem. So I put it as a theorem because.
I mean, is it easy to see this, or is it?
No, I don't find it easy to see.
You can give the braiding.
Yes. Oh, yes. Sorry, I can give the braiding. Sorry. So yes, in fact, we can see the braiding, but to prove this, yes, we can see it. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Sure. Let's look at the braiding. Yeah. So the braiding is just the fact that you put. So here it's just the operator that flips. W times V. So you just flip things, and if you want a braiding in the representation of A, you need to precompose it by the action of R. So you act with R, and then you flip. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, this is the way. Okay, yeah, sure. Thanks. Okay, so now we have this. Why is it triangular? And this is the R matrix. Yes, this is called the R matrix. Big R matrix. And then finally, just with. We will talk about the last piece of information that misses here, and this is the ribbon element. Let's talk about the ribbon element. So, first of all, you can see that we can define a kind of special element in our algebra. So, you can define U to be so you multiply the so in fact, you take the braiding, which is here. So first you braid, and then you apply S and the identity, and then you multiply. And this element, in fact, play a central role in what we are saying, because if you do the same thing that we did earlier with this kind of object, and you try to take the trivial, just braid it, and you try to see what you get. If you take this with the naive point of view of evaluation and co-evaluation being just the evaluation and you braid and you evaluate, then here you will get the same thing as earlier. So here there's some okay. This was like earlier, and you have some. Something like this, and this in fact will correspond to the action of USU. So what the philosophy here is to compensate this U times SU. So you want a balance element, a ribbon element. We really call it a ribbon element in the algebra context. And this element should be put in the evaluation, in the reverse evaluation and the reverse co-evaluation, in order to compensate this USU. So you want an element, V, such that the square of this element is USU.
Yes?
U
goes from A tensor A to A.
Right? So you twist the R matrix.
So what is the type of this object?
It's in A. Okay. Let's say that R is sum of I di. Then you twist. You put the twist. So you will have sum of bi tensor ii.
Flip.
I'm sorry, I always confuse the terms. So the flip here will be this, and if you put the if you act with s, you will have so r. This will be s bi tensor ii, and then you multiply, and you'll have sum of s bi. AI. So it's the product of SBI and AI. We take this one.
Excuse me, what it is written, U is a morphism, not an algebra.
Where? And this? It's an element. R is a 8 item tensor. So we want an element like this. And it needs to have a few more conditions of compatibilities. So the condition of compatibilities, and we write it publicly here. So you take a quasi triangular of algebra is ribbon. I don't know how to say it. Yeah, is ribbon. If there exists an element V of the center that verifies that V square equals the identity, the USU, the you want to verify the Rademeister one identity with it to balance. And that you have some compatibilities. So you want, in fact, that S of V equals Z, epsilon V equals 1, and that delta of V equals, so it's a bit of a boring notation, but I will try to explain it. Okay, so it's the product here, and of V tensor V. So with this, with an element like this, then the representation of R is ribbon. So we have the finite line. Just to say, compare the balancing element here and what we have defined here. This one is just if you remember. So the one is just the fact that you are compatible with the dual. The two here is just the fact that you have the compatibility with the unit. So you are compatible with the unit. And the third one is the last property of our balancing. And this is just the fact that if you take the tensor product, you will have, so you break two times, and you have U tensor B. This was, I don't put here, but this was the properties of the balancing in the categories. And each property that we had here is to have the good properties in the representation. So here we have our final element, but so ribbon. Here it's the V ribbon element. Okay. So now we have defined this nice structure of algebraic nice structure to have invariants of tangles of directed ribbons, but it's not easy to well, it's not. You don't have easily a quasi-triangular of algebra. You can have a lot of alpha algebras, but quasi-triangular, they are not quite natural, I think. So in fact, we need some machinery to transform the off algebra into a quasi-triangular off algebra. The ribbon element can always be added by you add an element to the vector space, and then you quotient it by a good relation. So this one, so you put an element b in plus, and you quotient it by this. But quasi-triangular structure, you need some machinery to have more quasi-triangular off algebra, and this is a way to do so. It's Dünnfeld's double, and it will be presented after lunch. And speaking of lunch, let's go.